Smoking in Maine, and why now's the time to kick the habit. It's one of the most difficult addictions to break. It shortens lives, affects even those who don't partake in the habit, and also presents costs both direct and indirect to the state government. I'm Erwin Gratz, in for Keith Shortall, and on our program today, we have a panel of experts to talk about the seen and hidden costs of smoking, some ways to help quit the habit, and the latest research on the dangers of tobacco smoke. With me in the studio, Dr. Sheila Panette. She's the director of the Maine Center for Disease Control. Hillary Schneider. She's the state director of government relations for the American Cancer Society here in Maine. And Marla Davis. She's a nurse and certified tobacco treatment specialist with the American Lung Association. Of course, we'd like to hear from you. Are you a smoker? If so, have you tried to quit? If you're a former smoker, how did you quit the habit? Email us at talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. The latest science on the dangers of smoking and how best to kick the addiction. This is Maine Calling. And good afternoon. Welcome to Maine Calling. I'm Erwin Gratz, in again today for Keith Shortall, who is still a little under the weather. We're going to talk today about smoking and perhaps more importantly about quitting. Welcome to my guests this afternoon, Hillary Schneider and Marla Davis, both of whom are with us in the studio right now. Good afternoon.
Hi, Erwin.
I'm not sure who wants to take this first one, but, you know, we have heard about the dangers of smoking for decades, literally decades. And the fact that people continue to start to smoke and continue to smoke, I think, suggests to us two things. One, that there must be some attraction to smoking that lingers. And two, it must be sometimes a very difficult habit to give up. Both of those seem to be true.
I think you hit it right on the head, Erwin. It's a very complicated and complex addiction. And while for many years we hesitated to call it an addiction and sort of covered it as a dependency, it really is an addiction. And it involves so many different aspects. There is the dependency to the nicotine itself. There is the attraction to the habit and the routine that people develop over time. And there are also some psychosocial issues, smoking with other people. It does relieve stress and anxiety and gives us some pleasurable chemicals that our body makes naturally, and that is at the root of its addiction.
I would just add that, you know, a majority of us smokers become addicted before the age of 18, and so this is really about youth engaging in the habit before and getting addicted before they're even legally allowed to buy the products.
So it's a pediatric disease, really.
Is there anything like a safe cigarette?
Not that Hillary and I know of. All of the cigarettes on the market today have tobacco and other preservatives and chemicals. The nicotine itself, which is the addictive substance, isn't really the most dangerous. It's the 4,000 other chemicals in the product. And these are chemicals that are added, but also chemicals that come from combustion. So once you're using tobacco, it affects every cell in your body. And we used to just think that it was lung cancer that was such a danger, but actually it's many types of cancer throughout the body, which Hillary knows a lot about, but also just profound lung disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, emphysema, chronic bronchitis, and even things like virility, macular degeneration, many other things that you don't often hear about are problems related to tobacco.
Yeah, and I would add that, as Marla said, it increases the risk of at least 15 types of cancer, most notable lung cancer, with over 80% of lung cancer deaths due to tobacco use, but 30% of all cancer deaths are due to tobacco use. So it also relates to cancers of the lung, as we talked about lung, but also esophageal, stomach cancer, pancreatic cancer, bladder cancer, 15 mm-hmm. different types. And the other thing is also the secondhand smoke mm-hmm. also contributes to cancer. and other health conditions like asthma and other respiratory issues.
Our body's in the attempt to get rid of all of these toxins. It causes the effect on many different organs. The bladder, for instance, the urine that runs through the urinary tract has these toxins in them, and they cause the irritation and the development of cancer in the bladder per se, and that can happen throughout the body.
Because this can be such a difficult habit to quit because of its addictive qualities, are any of these dangers lessened at all if one smokes less as opposed to completely quitting?
Well, I think it's probably hard to tell. That's a difficult question, but I guess it would the logic would be if you smoked less, you'd have less of a risk. Whether or not that plays out in research, I'm not sure, because there is no safe cigarette and there's no safe amount that one can smoke. Even light smokers get sick is the question, people who don't smoke as much.
All right.
But we do know that the likelihood of developing smoking-related cancers does increase with the duration of smoking. So if people quit sooner, for instance, smokers who quit, the research shows us, can add up to 8 years to their life. So sooner you quit, the better off you're going to be.
And just this week, the New England Journal of Medicine published new information about this, which tells us that if you quit before 40, you can actually gain back the 10 years that you would have lost. So that's a good motivator for people at any age to quit, because you can decrease your risks at any age. But up until 40, you can gain back the full 10 years.
Hmm. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can do that by giving us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. You can tweet at Maine Calling, or email us at talk@mppn.net, or post to our Facebook page. All right, well, let's talk about people who may be smoking and who would like to stop. There are all sorts of methods I know out there to do that. Is there one at this point that is considered to be favored, that has a very high success rate?
It's a great question, Erwin, and I like to bring an answer of hope. There are a lot of very useful methods for quitting tobacco. And fortunately, in the last 12 years, we've had a best practice guideline that brings together all the research about quit methods so that we know a lot about what works. Making a comprehensive plan to quit is the number one thing, and you can get help to do that from any Maine Tobacco helpline counselor. And calling that number, 1-207-1230, will hook you up with excellent support that can help you with this evidence-based quit methods. Essentially, the comprehensive quit plan involves considering your medication options, getting support, setting a quit date, and probably the hardest of all, changing your behaviors and your thinking about quitting. And that is very much helped by counseling with people who know about motivational interviewing. And that's a strategy of counseling and education that helps people to think about their goals and values on a very individual level. Lots of hopeful things out there to help people quit when they have determined their motivation.
I would just add that there's also a lot of resources available that not only can you work with your doctor to help provide you with that support and come up with that quit plan, but you can also call the helpline in Maine at 1-800-207-1230, or you can call the Cancer Society at 1-800-227-2345, or you can go to cancer.org, and there's resources and support, including a chat room to help provide that support. So there's a lot of means, not just going through your doctor, but you can also call one of these resources.
Okay, just so that folks know, we'll repeat those numbers again before the end of the show. We'll also put them up on our Facebook page as well, so people can find them there. That, of course, is one of the ways you can get in touch with us, along with email, talk@mpbn.net, or calling us at 800-399-3566.
Erwin, may I add that most hospitals in Maine have people who are prepared to help tobacco users when they're ready to quit. And so your local hospital is a real good resource. I provide this service for both inpatients and outpatients at Midcoast Hospital. And often when people are sick, it really does help to raise their motivation and help them face their motivation to quit. So it's an important service that most hospitals provide.
You mentioned a little bit earlier on in the program that nicotine is the addictive substance. How difficult, as an addictive substance, is that to overcome? Talk to us a little bit about how it works.
It's very difficult, and many people say that it's more difficult to give up than heroin. And I don't know that I've actually seen that in writing. I don't know about you, Hillary, but it is very difficult. Most of these addictive problems that we have are part of the brain operations. And when your brain and certain receptors in your brain get used to having nicotine, it's very profoundly difficult to not get that substance and to satisfy that craving. So it's very difficult, but 50% of the people who have smoked have been able to quit, and that, I think, brings a lot of hope. One of the most difficult things that we see today, though, are many people who are having trouble quitting are have some sort of a mental illness as a part of their profile, their health situation, and that seems to make it a little bit more difficult for them. It may be that those chemicals, those feel-good chemicals that our body gives us naturally when we are using nicotine, are just make it more profoundly difficult for people with mental illness to give up. But people who are healthy and of good sound mind and body seem to be working hard toward that. But it takes 7 to 10 tries for most people. It's a chronic relapsing condition. And the resources are really important because you have to do this again and again and again. But I like to share with my clients that every time they try to quit, they learn something new, and it helps them to be more successful, even if it's not in this moment, this time.
All right. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we've got another guest we're going to add to our discussion here. And we've got some of your comments and questions as well. Stay tuned. This is Maine Calling.
This week on Maine Watch, the renewed effort to legalize marijuana for recreational use in Maine. Supporters say legalizing and regulating marijuana would put drug dealers out of business and raise tax revenue. Opponents say it's a dangerous idea. Plus, activists protest the idea of moving tar sands oil through Maine. What's the likelihood it will happen? We hope you'll join us for Maine Watch.
And you can join us for Maine Watch tonight at 8 and tomorrow at 9 on MPBN television, or tune in tomorrow afternoon at 12:30 here on MPBN Radio.
The political thriller House of Cards is a new series produced by and available only on Netflix. It premieres Friday. On the next Fresh Air, we hear from executive producer David Fincher and actor Kevin Spacey, who plays a scheming politician.
It feels like I'm in a 26-hour championship chess match because it's all about the moves.
Join us.
Tune in for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Solo Bistro, creating contemporary dinners from fresh local ingredients and featuring live jazz every Friday night on Front Street in Bath, and by Maine Eye Center, helping the people of Maine enjoy seeing the world around them for more than 100 years. Learn more at MaineEyeCenter.com.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Erwin Gratzin today for Keith Shortall. Today on the program, we're talking about cigarette smoking. And with me in the studio today, we have Hillary Schneider. Hillary is with the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network. Also with us today, Marla Davis, who is a nurse at Midcoast Hospital and here on behalf of the American Lung Association. And also joining us now is Dr. Sheila Panette. She is the director of the Maine Center for Disease Control. Dr. Panette, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
So we've been talking a little bit about smoking and what a difficult thing it is for people to quit. My first question for you is, how many people are still smoking in Maine? How widespread an issue is this?
Well, according to a recent behavioral risk factor survey surveillance by telephone, the adult rate in Maine right now is approximately 2011 was 22.8%, and 2.8% of those were using smokeless tobacco such as chew and snuff. For our youth, through the youth risk behavioral survey, we have found that 15.2% of our youth, that's in high school age students between grades 9 and 12, were smoking in 2011 cigarettes, but 7.7% were doing chew and snuff, and 12.6% were doing cigars. So when we put the question at them of all combinations, it came out to 20.3% just recently in 2011.
All right. Also joining us by phone is University of Southern Maine President Theo Calico. President Calico, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you.
Now, one of the things that USM has done is to make its campus tobacco-free. Tell us why you did that.
Well, you know, Erwin, listening to my colleagues talk before, that's why. And it was time. You know, we're following the lead of many other institutions, campuses, businesses in Maine and across the country that have just said it's time to take a stand and help our employees and our students not do this.
Okay. Did you get a lot of pushback from some of those employees and students who are still smokers?
Some, yes. I did this already before when I was at UMaine Farmington, and we got some pushback, but it's still the right thing to do.
Tell us a little bit about the plan. I mean, how widespread is it? I mean, is there anywhere in the vicinity of campus that people can still smoke? Or?
Yeah, but I think that's the wrong question. You can always find some place to smoke if you really need to do it. But preferably, and now by policy, not on USM's three campuses.
Okay.
Go ahead.
How's it been going so far?
So far, so good. This is the first month that we've done it. But as I walk around the campuses, I notice a lot fewer people outside smoking, a lot less litter. So I think it's working about as well as you can expect at this early stage.
Has the school gotten involved at all, perhaps, in helping either students or faculty or staff in quitting? And if you offer those services, have people been using them more since this started?
We offer the services. We have extensive services on campus. And, of course, we refer to all the off-campus services that we've just heard about on this program. And I think people are starting to become aware and take action for themselves.
Okay. Very good. Well, President Calico, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Thank you for joining us today.
You're welcome.
That's President Theo Calico of the University of Southern Maine, whose campus is now smoke-free. And I wanted to ask my guests in the studio here, are those kinds of conditions, rules, does that help people stop smoking?
I think we have a lot to learn about what can help. But one thing that we do know is changing policy and changing the environment are what help to promote healthier living. And so what we see here from the University of Southern Maine is really both creating a new environment, providing support, and making a policy and gently enforcing it is what helps to expand the smoke-free zone in the long run.
I would say absolutely it helps. I mean, we have a significant body of evidence that shows that laws and policies are part of the tobacco prevention and control strategy, but that you need a comprehensive strategy that includes increasing the prices of tobacco products, restricting smoking in public places, counter-advertising campaigns, and supporting prevention efforts at a state and federal level.
All right. We want to remind you to join our conversation here. You can do that by calling us at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566, or emailing us at talk@mpbn.net. Well, we've got actually three callers we're going to hear from now, who all of whom I think have something to say that will perhaps inspire those who wish to quit. Let's start with Nicholas in Belfast. Nicholas, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, good afternoon. I was a smoker for about 10 years, and I wanted to just say one of the, you know, the vital tools that helped me to quit smoking was practicing mindfulness meditation. Often, as a culture, we're not really taught how to deal with challenging emotions, how to deal with strong emotions and urges that come up, like addiction. It's a very hard feeling to work through. Usually we just satisfy it immediately. And being present with the emotion and allowing it to be there, or present with the addiction that came up, focusing on breathing, doing some meditation, was vital in quitting, because it allowed the addiction to be there and I wasn't enslaved to it anymore. And eventually, those cravings lessened and lessened and lessened, and they're not there anymore.
And Marla Davis was just cheering you on there when you were talking about
absolutely.
This. So, all right. Well, Nicholas, thank you very much for sharing that with us. Nicholas there in Belfast. Let's go next to Les on Westport Island. Les, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I was a smoker. I quit about 25 years ago. I was up to about 2 packs a day before I quit. And the methods I used with some friends, we kind of made a pact together to quit. And the plan was to taper down gradually. And like if I was driving on the highway and I had a real urge to have a cigarette, I'd tell myself, well, I'll wait till I go past the next exit or something like that. And if the urge wasn't real powerful then, I would say, okay, well, the exit after that. And if I wasn't driving, other chores I was doing, I would put it off to a convenient stopping point. And I guess it took about a month to gradually cut down. And the last two cigarettes were the one with the morning coffee and the one after dinner. And by the time we reached that, it was a lot easier to just cut it off. You know, the first 2 days were the hardest, but then it kept getting easier. And it's been 25 years, haven't picked up a cigarette since.
Well, congratulations.
Absolutely. Dr. Panette, you wanted to say something about this, too.
Yeah, Les, I wanted to say congratulations, and that's exactly what we want people to have for the message, is that when you commit yourself, try to involve your family, your friends, your relatives, your coworkers. Make a pact to yourself. Gradually wean down and recognize that this is not just a physiologic addiction, but a behavioral modification, which is often very difficult. You quoted that the morning cigarette and going to bed at night. We also have to remember people have a tendency to drink when they go out and have a cigarette when they party with their friends, and celebrations of birthdays and holidays and times with friends. And so I always said to my patients, try to do it at a time when you're not going to be having a lot of celebrations going on, because then it'll put you up for failure. So you did the right things, and it's always making sure you have a behavior such as exercising and eating healthy and curbing ways and figuring out ways that you can do something like chewing gum instead of picking up a cigarette. So congratulations.
You know, the more I hear this as well, I mean, one of the themes that comes through here, we're going to talk to somebody else who has quit as well in a moment, there really is no right way to do this either. I mean, whether it's meditation, whether it's working with friends, there are all sorts of ways to get there.
The beauty is that it's personalized, that the plan fits the person's values, goals, all of their hopes and dreams, and that they address, you know, what's in their heart as well as what's in their mind. And the two callers so far have given excellent tips and tricks about things that work. I wanted to comment about what Les did. He did not use any medication. He used a procedure called tapering, and he used a delay technique as a part of this tapering. And it's very effective for many people who can't or don't choose to use nicotine replacement therapy, which is the most common form of medication for cessation.
All right. Once again, our topic today is smoking here on Maine Calling. If you'd like to join our conversation, the phone number is 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Next up, Judy in Yarmouth. Judy, good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. I'm an ex-smoker. I stopped smoking July 31st, 1981 at 11 o'clock in the morning. And it's probably the only date I really remember. I used to smoke 3 to 5 packs a day. I went to the American Cancer Society, and they had a wonderful group. And I think, one, I was really ready. That's really important. And they said I stayed off smoking. I did a lot of talking to myself. What had happened when I had a cigarette, my whole notion of having a cigarette was trying to make myself feel better. And so one of the things that I did was, if I thought about having a cigarette, I'd say to myself, do you want a cigarette or do you want to feel better? So I kind of had to separate out the notion that they were the same. I think the other thing that I did was the reminder that having one cigarette was like having your whole habit back. There's no such thing as having one cigarette. It's like being a little pregnant. And then I thought about different kinds of things. Like I was in a lot of emotional pain and physical pain when I stopped smoking. And so when I went to think about having a cigarette, I thought, oh, my God, do I want to have gone through all of that for nothing?
Let me ask somebody on the panel to address this. It's interesting. Listening to Judy talk reminds me of something Dr. Panette said a minute ago, which is that sometimes this is about behavior modification. How can you tell if you're a smoker, if just modifying behavior will be enough, or if that addiction to nicotine is going to need a stronger intervention, if you will?
In my many years of tobacco treatment work, I find that it's hard to know that, and it takes some experimenting. And perhaps that's one of the things involved in the fact that it takes 7 to 10 tries to quit. So once you try a few times and you learn what you need, you add to that plan. And so not using medications may be the first pass. And if necessary, going on to use medications in the future if relapse occurs. So it can be an additive sort of effect, Irvin. It isn't necessary that you know exactly how to do it, because it's so different every time you try.
Hmm. That's right. And I want to comment that I think you learn from every single experience that you have. And so you grow with that. And I think you need to talk to other people and find out what's good for you, and talk to your primary care provider, who you oftentimes trust the most with your health, as to guide you. The American Cancer Association has resources available, as well as the Maine CDC. We have the Maine Tobacco Helpline, which is 24/7 at 1-800-207-1230. And you can call 24 hours a day. We have counselors there who can help you through this.
All right.
Now, I would just like to add, too, that we keep hearing this theme of support from friends and family members. But, you know, having supportive laws and policies is also critically important. And that's why these things we've talked about, like what USM has done with comprehensive smoke-free laws. And we know that those types of laws also help people to quit, help people prevent youth from taking up the habit. And also, when parents quit, we also know that the children are less likely to smoke. And the other thing is having laws that provide health coverage for treatment and access to the nicotine replacement therapy or the prescription drugs is vitally important.
All right. We're going to take another short break. And when we return, we'll have more of your comments and questions. Stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
On the next Backstory, the Second Amendment protects the right to bear arms. And it's true, the founders were worried about citizens losing access to guns, but not quite in the way you might think.
It's not that, you know, somebody's going to come around and knock on doors and take away their guns. It's the state government's not going to give these guys guns or sell them guns at affordable levels.
A History of Gun Ownership on the next Backstory.
And you can hear that program this afternoon at 1 o'clock immediately following Maine Calling here on MPBN Radio.
Chuck Hagel returns to the Senate seeking confirmation as Secretary of Defense. This Vietnam veteran will get a much different reception than John Kerry did, though. Who's trying to defeat Hagel and why? Perhaps more important, who's funding this takedown? You don't need to understand philosopher George Hagel to understand the curious politics of Chuck Hagel. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tune in for The Takeaway this evening at midnight.
And welcome back to Maine Calling. I'm Erwin Gratz, and today for Keith Shortall, we're talking about the dangers of smoking and tips on how to break the habit. With me here in the studio, Dr. Sheila Panette. She's the director of the Maine Center for Disease Control. Also with me today, Hillary Schneider, who's the State Director of Government Relations for the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network, and Marlon Davis, who is a nurse and is here on behalf of the American Lung Association. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566, email talk at mpbn.net, post to our Facebook page, or tweet at Maine Calling. I want to go next to Tony, who's calling us from Massachusetts. Good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me on your show. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have a question. More so, I used to be a smoker 10 years ago. I quit literally 10 years ago. I used to smoke 2 packs a day. And what really I felt then, and I still feel now, even in your conversation, is that it's always instilled in people's mind that quitting smoking is such a difficult endeavor. And I remember I quit cold turkey and I never picked up a cigarette after that. Today I decided not to. And my way of thinking was I will just not follow the mainstream. I'll just think that it's a simple thing to do. It couldn't possibly be as hard as people say it is. And I find that the more I talk to people that it's not such a hard thing, the more they just don't believe it. They are, it's not a, I mean, not in a cheesy way, believe it, but truly, I truly think that it's more in people's mind. It's a mind game more than it's truly, really such a difficult thing.
Well, let me have my guest comment on that, and then I want you to keep listening to the program because we have an interesting caller coming up next. But
well, it's wonderful to hear your story, Tony. I think my response is that everyone's addiction is different, and the needs that people have are all different. And it's wonderful that you were able to quit cold turkey, but not everybody is. Maybe not everybody is quite as motivated as you were. It's awfully hard to tell. But the medications that are available do help people to be comfortable, to keep their cravings and the irritability at bay so that they can get through another day, another day, another day until they're more and more comfortable on their own. So I congratulate you for being able to quit cold turkey. And at the same time, I need to acknowledge that other people need to do it in different ways.
All right. Thank you, Tony. Let's go next to Liz in Saco. Hello, you're on Maine Calling.
Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for having this program. I quit smoking before I got pregnant both times, and when my girls were going into middle school and I thought, you know, this is the time when they might pick up, I quit smoking cold turkey for 15 years. And 5 years ago, I was 40 at the time, and I really liked hearing that at 40, if you quit, you could gain 10 years. But 5 years ago, I started up again, and I thought I could just smoke for a couple of days. And I find the addiction just horrendous now, and in fact was diagnosed with COPD on December 31st, and I have tried and tried, and I feel like it's too late now. I quit for 15. I'm now 60, and I've done the damage, and I just don't feel like I can do it. Is there any help?
Okay, Liz. Well, the people in the studio here are shaking their heads, so
yes,
they've got information for you.
Go ahead. I think there's reason to be hopeful, because even though you've learned that you have chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you can stop that and slow the pace of your change. You can go back to a non-smoker's quality of life. And there is reason to be hopeful that the resources in the state of Maine could be useful to you were you to access the helpline or a tobacco treatment specialist in your area to help you to make a personalized quit plan.
And Liz, this is Dr. Panette. I just want to say that everybody in their life, as we go through different stages, goes through mentally different issues, and maybe you're finding there to be more challenges in your life at this time. You know, maybe you might, I don't know if you're depressed or anxious, but maybe you want to seek help and guidance from your primary care provider. But I just want to assure you that every day that you go without a cigarette, it'll give you life to your years and years to your life, and you'll be much happier, and it will slow the progression of your COPD down.
All right. Liz, thank you for your call this afternoon. Dr. Panette, I've got a question for you that somebody posted to us on Facebook. They're actually looking for a possible correlation. They were pointing out that Maine does have one of the highest rates of cigarette smoking still. And Maine is also has a high rate of child asthma. I was wondering if those two are actually linked.
Well, we do have a high incidence of secondary hand smoke, and thus in 2011 they passed many laws that people could not smoke in public areas, state parks, state beaches, and we encourage municipalities to also do that. Secondhand smoke is one of those areas where we are motivated to try to seek change, and you know, a lot of times a young child could have allergies or viruses that stimulate asthmatic attacks, but a lot of times it's their environment. And recently in 2012, the Housing Authority has gone smoke-free. So it's also the environment within which you live that helps to trigger it as well. So, yes, there is a correlation between asthma and smoking.
All right. Let's go to Mary Kay in Dayblock County. Hello, you're on Maine Calling.
Well, hello there, and it's Dayblock Township. I'm in Washington.
Township, there we go. That makes sense.
Yeah. Right. Well, I'll try to be succinct. I am a two-time lung cancer survivor. I'm 65 years old. I smoked from the time I was 16 years old until about, I'm going to say 7 years ago. Some people keep track of those dates. I don't. I am here to say, first of all, that nicotine is for me and for some, an extremely addictive substance. The way I quit, which, by the way, was actually a couple of years before I was diagnosed with lung cancer, was to recognize and accept the fact that the craving I was experiencing was going to be there whether I was smoking or not. I heard a gentleman on your show just a few minutes ago say that he delayed his giving in to smoking because the craving might lessen or it might go away. In fact, it does. The craving comes, you take some deep breaths, you commit yourself to not smoking, and then pretty soon the craving goes away as if you had already smoked. And that craving is exactly the same craving you feel when you are a smoker. This is what makes you go ahead, except for the habit, this is what makes you light up. Now then, there's two parts of it. There's a habit where after dinner you have one. While you're blow drying your hair, you have one. The telephone rings, you have one. You have your morning coffee, you have one. Half the time they burn up in the ashtray. It's a routine. That's part of it. In 2 weeks, that goes away. The craving never goes away. It has been quite a long time for me now, and I have to confess that occasionally, just listening to your show reminds me, wherever that little place is in my brain, that I have an addiction and I can feel the craving. Not anything like it was, of course, and it goes away right away.
But it's still, you know, but you still do feel it. But it's, what's interesting about that is it's then possible, I guess, for people to successfully quit and to resist the cravings that may linger. Dr. Panette.
I just wanted to comment. You're exactly right. There is a portion of your brain called the nucleus accumbens, which is in the frontal part of your brain, responsible for cravings. And once you stimulate that portion of your brain, you stimulate that addiction craving for the rest of your life. That's why it's so very, very difficult physiologically to stop. It's the same area that cocaine addicts, heroin addicts, drug addicts, alcoholics, it's all stimulated there. And so, yes, it will be a chronic problem. And so every day people have to resist. And I applaud you for continuing on the road to being addiction free.
All right. Mary Kay, thank you very much for the call. We've got time for one more caller here. Let's go to Rhonda in Belfast. Good afternoon. You're on Maine Calling.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. You know, I want to
Yes? Okay. I guess that dropped.
Oh, here I am.
There you are. Okay.
Here I am. Okay.
Go ahead.
So, thanks for taking my call. You know, one of the things we haven't just talked about is how Asian medicine and acupuncture has been so helpful in everything that all of these callers have talked about in terms of there are many protocols that that are done that deal with cravings, that deal with the underlying ideas of addiction and deal with the whole body balance that can make stop smoking so much easier. So all of the things that we are talking about in terms of habits and looking at when you're smoking and smoking half a cigarette and all of those things are really, really important, but also working on a very fundamental sympathetic nervous system on aspect, and acupuncture is so useful for that, has been documented and effective in terms of addiction and and whole body well-being. So,
well, Rhonda,
I didn't want to let the program go by without talking about Chinese medicine, and there are many, many licensed acupuncturists in
Rhonda,
the state of Maine.
Thank you very much. We got to leave it there, but thank you again. More evidence that there are many paths for those who wish to quit. Somebody give out the phone number one more time to the Maine.
Yes, the Maine Tobacco Helpline is 1-800-207-1230.
Okay, and again, that'll be at our Facebook page if you need to pick it up from there. Let me thank Dr. Panette, Hillary, Marla, all of you for joining us this afternoon. Once again, we were joined today by Dr. Sheila Panette, Director of the Maine Center for Disease Control, Hillary Schneider, from the American Cancer Society's Cancer Action Network, and Marla Davis, who is here on behalf of the American Lung Association. Today's program was produced by our volunteer, Marcel Hutchins and Jonathan Smith. Marcella also answered your phone calls. John Keimel ran the board. We had help from the MPBN web team. I'm Erwin Gratz in for Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling here on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network. Thanks for listening. Have a great afternoon.